I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Convincing story that maps onto reality, and that's why the central narrative is falling apart.
Right now in the United States, people should not be walking around with masks.
We must see the central narrative for the fiction that it is. We are Americans.
While elections are sometimes messy, this was a secure election.
The founders began the fight for human liberty and self-governance, and it's up to us to finish the job.
I tell you what, we are in a truth emergency right now.
This is the end game.
It's Thursday, April 18th, 2024, the 1184th day of dystopia. I'm your moderator, Chris Paul. Let's be reasonable. A warm welcome and hello to all of you listening to the podcast on the day of its release. The only way to do that is by becoming a paid subscriber at imyourmoderator.substack.com. You can do so for as little as $50 a year or $5 a month, and in doing so, you will be supporting me, the work I do, and this show as it expands. And if you can't or you simply don't want to, continue listening to the podcast for free a couple days later on a wide variety of podcast platforms and, of course, Rumble. All I ask is that you share it with your friends. You can find the links to the podcast, the writing, the social media, and the merch site by visiting linktree.com/imyourmoderator. So we ended the show yesterday with a New York Times article that attempted to give some context to the series of recent meetings Donald Trump has had with various world leaders, attempting to let everybody know it was totally normal for foreign leaders to have meetings and conversations with a quote-unquote former president who is currently running to be president again, but also currently facing 88 very, very real charges that carry with them the possibility of imprisonment for Donald Trump. He might not be able to be president again because he's going to be in jail. That's what the television tells us. I'm sure that these foreign leaders have television as well. They have heard the claims that Donald Trump might end up in prison and might not be the president again. But they are still coming to meet with him for whatever reason, I guess just in the off chance that he's able to defeat the most popular president of all time, Joe Biden, and his 81 real lawful American votes. Donald Trump might be able to defeat Joe Biden in a very real election, and then they want to be on his good side. That's what the New York Times told us. And I saw another article or two out today attempting to provide similar context, letting us know that Barack Obama actually went on a world tour when he was first running for president. Don't you remember he went over and spoke in Germany? All a part of presenting Barack Obama to the world as somehow a uniting figure not only in America based on his skin color, but also around the world based on his unyielding commitment to global communism. And because Barack Obama went on a world tour, and because Barack Obama staged a shadow presidency going around the world attempting to conduct global affairs on behalf of America as though he were still president during Donald Trump's first publicly recognized term, all of these world leaders coming to meet with Donald Trump or having phone conversations with Donald Trump, all of it is totally normal. They are just hedging their bets in the media's framing. They are making sure that even if the most popular president of all time, Joe Biden, doesn't win re-election, they're going to be in good shape with the American leadership. Because that's how it works. You just placate Donald Trump and his ego in the off chance that America elects Donald Trump for the third straight time. The point is, according to the media, that all of this is normal. And they will keep that up for as long as it takes, or until they realize that maybe they have a story they can attempt to sell as Donald Trump colluding with foreign adversaries to win the 2024 election. And at that point, it will go from being normal to being criminal, and then they'll say that Donald Trump must be imprisoned for far longer. Now, all of this was in the run-up to Polish President Andrzej Duda. Reports from their meeting suggest that Trump and Duda discussed the war in Ukraine and the situation in the Middle East, as well as NATO spending. Duda said that it was a friendly meeting in a very nice atmosphere. One of Duda's aides described it as an excellent meeting of two friends who reminisced on the time when for 4 years they cooperated while holding presidential offices, a time that was, quote, very fruitful for Polish-U.S. relations. CBS News, in their reporting, an article with the headline, Poland's Duda is the latest foreign leader to meet with Trump as U.S. allies hedge their bets on November election, wrote, Biden administration officials have been careful not to weigh in publicly on foreign leaders' meetings with Trump, acknowledging he has a real chance of winning the race. While some officials have privately expressed frustration with such meetings, they are mindful that any criticism would open the U.S. to charges of hypocrisy because senior American officials, including Secretary of State Antony Blinken, meet frequently with foreign opposition figures at various forums in the United States and abroad. And that is certainly a strange way to frame that. I mean, Antony Blinken, after all, is the very real Secretary of State for the very real president. It is using the present tense, saying that he meets frequently. I mean, isn't that his job? Or are they saying he also does that and did that when Donald Trump was in power? Because it definitely can't be the case that the illegitimate administration and its officials should not be meeting with foreign leaders right now. But I'm just kidding. That's a conspiracy theory, and everybody knows that the mainstream media always reports this stuff correctly. Trump and Duda, after their meeting, walked out to greet the press. Trump delivered a few comments, and here is what he said.
People of Poland love him. They're really very good in Poland. They love him. And it's not an easy thing to accomplish, but he's done a fantastic job, and he's my friend. And we had four great years together. Four great years. So
that's true.
We may have to do it again. Thank you very much, everybody. Appreciate
President,
it.
President, what do you want to say to the President of Poland on the meeting?
Well, we have great respect for the country, and we have great respect for the President. As you know, we've had a very good and personal relationship. Never had even a problem, not even a minor problem. We agree on so much, but we're behind Poland all the way. And I know Poland feels the same way, but we're behind Poland all the way. Okay? Thank you. Thank you.
Now, I know the sound was a bit muddled. Hopefully, it wasn't too difficult to hear. Trump basically said they had a good relationship for 4 years and they hope to do that again. He said, we're behind Poland all the way, and I know that Poland feels the same way. Now, Donald Trump is certainly not talking about his campaign. He's saying they are aligned in their efforts to fight back against this global regime. That is Donald Trump's project. That is what it means for these foreign leaders to be allied with Trump. And that is what Trump means when he says, we are behind Poland. It means they are working toward the same goals, and America, under the leadership of Donald Trump, is here to support that. So clearly a very positive meeting. Again, spectacular optics. And I imagine we will see a continuation of this trend where we can see clearly foreign leaders lining up to signal their allegiance to Donald Trump. And of course, vice versa. I'm not suggesting that these are all just Donald Trump's vassals. They are being treated as they should be treated, as equals, as leaders of foreign nations who we would like to have good relations with. It is under the global regime's construct that leaders of smaller, weaker nations are treated as vassals because they don't have the ability to stand up to the regime superpowers. Now, there was one mysterious little piece of content emerging from this meeting, and I don't know what it means at this point. Maybe one of the super sleuths out there will figure it out and let us know. There was a picture taken of Trump and Duda next to one another. Duda holding what looks like a gold plate, maybe with Donald Trump's signature engraved into it. It's a bit hard to tell. And then Donald Trump holding some sort of golden scepter. If you want to see that for yourself, you can go to the info stream t.me/veryreasonable on Telegram. Click on the search icon and type in artifacts. You will find it. But an unusual picture, and you have to think that the things they were holding do have some significance in the proper context. But let's move forward. To America First Legal, this is from yesterday. America First Legal sues HHS Secretary Becerra and National Archives following investigation revealing the Biden administration illegally deletes former CDC employees' email, illustrating two-tiered system of justice. That headline is almost long enough for this article to be in the Daily Mail. Today, America First Legal sued Secretary Javier Becerra, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the archivist of the United States, Colleen Shogan, and the National Archives and Records Administration, NARA, for illegally destroying federal records from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in violation of the Federal Records Act. On March 29, 2023, AFL sent a letter to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office of Inspector General requesting an investigation of the CDC's unlawful policy of deleting employee emails. AFL requested records regarding the CDC's support for teacher-led indoctrination of children with radical gender ideology. Federal law requires that each agency, quote, make and preserve records containing adequate and proper documentation of the organization, functions, policies, decisions, procedures, and essential transactions of the agency, and designed to furnish the information necessary to protect the legal and financial rights of the government and of persons directly affected by the agency's activities, end quote. Yet in a routine email regarding the disclosure of these records, the CDC told AFL that the CDC routinely deletes the emails of nearly all of its employees 30 days after they leave the agency. And they attached to the press release a screenshot of that email where the CDC FOIA analyst writes, that is correct, unless there were a capstone director slash manager, etc., it is my understanding all other employees' emails are deleted 30 days after they leave the agency. Thanks. NARA investigated the allegations but determined that because the, quote, CDC instructs individual email account holders to apply retention based on the email's content value and its applicability to a NARA-approved record schedule, end quote, NARA considered the matter closed. In short, NARA appears to entrust individual CDC employees to decide which emails can be properly deleted. Here is NARA's response. NARA acknowledges that the CDC's policies and procedures prohibit disposing of separated employees' email accounts without authorization, and specific criteria must be met before the email accounts of separated employees are deleted. The CDC does not require the preservation of all emails, but rather preserves all records from email accounts. CDC's records management policy instructs all agency personnel to maintain records outside of email accounts in a proper record-keeping system, shared drive, personal drive, or physical format. The CDC instructs individual email account holders to apply retention based on the email's content value and its applicability to a NARA-approved record schedule. Based on the information provided, the reporting requirements have been met, and NARA considers this matter closed. And the email concludes, "I appreciate your attention to this critical matter." AFL, America First Legal, writes, "This is patently inconsistent with the law. Moreover, if the federal government wants to unlawfully assert that any time a government employee leaves an agency, their records are no longer considered records of the United States, then the same assumption would apply to former presidents of the United States. According to this logic, Special Counsel Jack Smith's prosecution of President Trump over presidential records would be voided null, as the records in question would effectively no longer be considered records of the United States upon the end of the Trump presidency. It cannot be that a career bureaucrat at the CDC or any government agency has more say than a former president, and yet, under the Biden administration, that appears to be the case. Notably, in one case involving the FBI, former FBI agent Scott Payne intentionally removed official records from the FBI's custody. According to press reports cited by NARA, quote, "Sitting in the crates Mr. Payne brought home when he retired are the field notes and transcripts of every case he's worked," end quote. NARA did not refer Mr. Payne to the Department of Justice for investigation. Instead, it permitted the FBI to, quote, "retrieve 99 disks from the former employee's residence, documented that the former employee affirmed that he does not possess any hard copy documents, and that the disks are the, quote, totality of government records and information in his possession," end quote. A former FBI agent who intentionally removed sensitive law enforcement records from a federal agency and held those records for several years is not referred for investigation nor prosecuted. Yet President Trump, who transferred records he believed to be personal records or non-records to his home, was referred to the DOJ for investigation by NARA without authority. And of course, aside from the illegality of systematically deleting these records, what is the CDC trying to hide? Why does it have a records deletion process that entrusts individual bureaucrats to decide what are official records and what aren't? Now, that seems like a great way to create plausible deniability and dilute any responsibility by leaving the decisions on what can or should be deleted up to employees who are no longer working with the CDC. I mean, the CDC is a governmental organization, right? That is what we're told. There are fact checks on the internet letting us know that the CDC is absolutely a government organization. And if that's the case, and the government is meant to be of, by, and for the people, then those are the people's records. Why would the people want their records deleted after 30 days? What sort of good does that create for the American people, having separated employees decide what should and shouldn't be kept and then having everything else deleted after 30 days? How is that even a remotely responsible possibility? And then you get to NARA and what their role is in the Trump documents fake indictment. When we imagine what a National Archives and Records Administration should be doing, we would think, okay, they're here to preserve all of the documents that our government produces so that we can always have a record of what has been done and how. We can know what processes led to what decisions and who made those decisions so we know who to hold accountable. But nope, it turns out that's not what it's for. What the National Archives and Records Administration seems to be for is to dump all the documents that the members of our thoroughly infiltrated and corrupted federal government, the deep state and the administrative state, don't want anyone to ever see again. We have the Freedom of Information Act and the FOIA process, but if they don't want anything seen, well, you just classify that or say that it doesn't exist, or just go right ahead and delete it. And when that's the case, what NARA then seems to be is simply a gatekeeper to the information that by rights we all possess as the American people. Whose government is it, if not ours? And it's clear that it's not our government. So again, whose government is it? And not to go too far aside, but many of us have been extraordinarily frustrated over the last 3.5 years understanding the injustice that is happening in this country. But at the same time, how would we have known any of this stuff otherwise? Would we have known anything about the problems presented by the National Archives? I can't imagine anyone thinks that answer is yes. This period certainly isn't fun. It's not something we would have asked for, but we do want the results, and we did want the results, and we said we wanted the results, and it just so happens this is the only way to get to those results. This really goes back to the idea that people can't be told, they need to be shown. And I don't know about you, but that is true for me in my own life. There is no way I would have possibly understood the depth of any of this had we not been repeatedly shown all of it, all of the facets, through these long-running narrative storylines. We are being slowly but effectively trained to understand government corruption and communist infiltration. Now, speaking of communist infiltration, let's talk about the Senate. Do I mean Senate Democrats? No, I mean absolutely the entire Senate. And if there are 1 or 2 or 5 or 10 good ones in there that just get caught up in my generalization, hey, the way to avoid that is to do your job way better. Okay, so Republican politicians in the illegitimate House of Representatives have been talking for quite a long time about bringing articles of impeachment against Joe Biden and against Alejandro Mayorkas. They are going to impeach both of these men and remove them from office so that we can finally fix the problems in this country, most specifically at the border, where Alejandro Mayorkas, the Department of Homeland Security Secretary, has been an abject failure in his job to prevent the invasion of the United States of America. In fact, he is allowing the invasion and facilitating the invasion, and that seems, you know, wrong. And because these House Republicans can't just cut off spending for some reason, and they can't use the power of the purse to make the fake president enforce our borders, what we need to do is make a huge display out of impeachments that will never, ever have any chance of being successful. We're going to simply pretend that we might remove Alejandro Mayorkas through the impeachment process. We've been doing this now for about a year, and they have finally brought and passed the articles of impeachment against Mayorkas. They did that about a month ago, and they've just been waiting until the exact right moment for when they were going to walk the articles of impeachment over to the Senate and begin the historic impeachment trial of Cabinet Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. A number of Republican members of the House walked those impeachment articles over on Tuesday. The headline from ABC News was, "Historic impeachment articles against Alejandro Mayorkas sent to Senate, but will there be a full trial?" They note that Alejandro Mayorkas is only the second cabinet secretary to be impeached in U.S. history, following William Belknap, who was Secretary of War, his impeachment in 1876. And of course, that was the era following the Civil War when the Constitution was completely and totally overthrown by a bunch of global communists. All of this is shouted loudly and proudly by Columbia Law School professor and devout global communist George P. Fletcher in his book, Our Secret Constitution, that I have mentioned countless times on this show. But on Tuesday, we got a short new episode of the television show. We got to watch Republican members of an illegitimate Congress walk these impeachment articles over to the Senate, the illegitimate members of Congress impeaching the illegitimate DHS secretary of the illegitimate Biden administration in an effort that was absolutely 100% certain to fail. And of course, everyone involved with the effort knew that. So what part of the effort should be considered real? I would argue that zero parts should be considered real. Did they do it at all? Well, we saw on TV that they did, and the Senate showed us a TV show where they reacted, but also everything they do is performative. So what are we supposed to make of this? The people bringing the impeachment presented themselves to us as our heroes, people who were working on our behalf as the American people. They understood that the immigration problem, the invasion of this country in the last decade, is something that sort of upsets Americans, and they were going to show us that finally they cared enough to pretend to attempt to stop it. But let's say the whole thing was real. Let's say they brought a real impeachment over to a real Senate, and the real Senate held a trial and then held a vote and removed Alejandro Mayorkas despite the legitimacy of the entire administration he serves. They were going to get rid of him. Then what? Then they begin the process of replacing him so that his replacement can proceed with enacting the same policies. The only threat that would be staring him in the face, of course, would be another impeachment. So all of this was a joke from the beginning. It was an info op. We should analyze it as an info op. Is it a good info op? Is it a bad info op? That is up for you and your interpretation. But nothing about this was legitimate or real. So walking the articles of impeachment over to the Senate on Tuesday were the so-called House impeachment managers and Foreign Affairs Committee Chairman Michael McCaul. He is a major proponent of continued spending on the fake foreign proxy wars, and we will discuss those more in a little bit. And he was joined by Representatives Andy Biggs, Ben Klein, Andrew Garbarino, Michael Guest, Harriet Hageman, Clay Higgins, Laurel Lee, Austin Pfluger, and Marjorie Taylor Greene. Now, there are certainly some names in that group that we have grown to like for the most part, because they seem to be the best fighters on the MAGA side of things. They seem to approach issues from an America First perspective. But again, that could just be branding. Why are they blowing smoke up all our asses, pretending that this is a real impeachment? If it turns out that all of this is a good info op designed to wake up the normies or put on display various levels of corruption in our federal government, all good. But it's strange that they need to lie directly to the people who support them most to be able to accomplish these goals. And we really need to start thinking about those things more. To present a positive face on these developments, people too often, in my opinion, turn to the explanation that they are lying to us for our own good. This is all designed to wake up the normies and expose more stuff. Now, that might be the result. That might be the consequence. And that part is good. And maybe the truth is that people need to go through that emotional ride again and again and again until they finally get it and stop getting all excited and cheering for this performative nonsense. And as I often say, if that's the case, all good. I would be more than happy to apologize to any of these people for ever doubting their commitment to the cause. But what we can see right now is a whole bunch of people telling us that the solution lies in their continued and ongoing efforts to impeach an illegitimate secretary of an illegitimate administration while never calling out the illegitimacy of any of it. And in that, they are indistinguishable from controlled opposition. There is no way to be certain that these efforts are not just controlled opposition designed to make MAGA and America First-minded American men and women believe they have someone in Congress fighting for them as they continue to support uniparty politicians just because they have little R's next to their name. Even if this is a good info op, what are we supposed to take from this and what are we supposed to do? Are we supposed to go and volunteer and donate and go out and vote for these people whose job for the last 2 years has been to lie to us in order to perform a stage play that is going to wake all of America up to the understanding that these institutions are infiltrated and corrupted and illegitimate? If that's the case, how do we know that they can actually do their jobs? And why would we need to re-elect them to do this same thing again? We don't want them to just keep performing this stage show forever, do we? And if the whole point is to prove that the institutions are corrupt and infiltrated, why should we assume that that's only the people with the D's next to their name? I mean, we just finished watching 4 years of those people with the little D's next to their names performing a stage show to try to show the country how corrupt Donald Trump and his people were. Now, again, I'm not the one who planned all of this stuff out. I certainly can't see all the way to the bottom. I don't know what exactly all of this ultimately means. If this is what must be done, then I accept it. But at some point, it has to end. And if we never ask for it to end, if we never call this stuff out for what it is, and we simply say, well, we're going to give them the benefit of the doubt again while we can see that they're absolutely lying to us and absolutely staging this weird performance, then why would it ever stop? What indication would the good guys, in quotes, setting all of this stuff up, ever have to know that we are prepared to move to the next phase, if we're just clapping every time one of these people goes on television and tells us how they're going to impeach Alejandro Mayorkas and then asks us for money? And to be clear, I'm not suggesting that the response is to get angry. The response is to not take any of this stuff all that seriously in the first place. We know that the problems are so much deeper. We have to focus on those problems. These people are not elected in legitimate elections. By rights, they should not have the power to do any of this. But until people stop participating in the stage show and call it for what it is, you can expect it's going to continue. Okay, so we have an illegitimate Congress attempting to impeach an illegitimate cabinet secretary under an illegitimate president in a process that everyone involved knows will fail. But we're told there's going to be this investigation and a revealing of the facts. And these facts are going to be revealed in the Senate trial for all the nation to see. And finally, everyone's going to know what we've known for years because the investigations aren't really current. And that process is going to wake up the normies, thus making all of it absolutely worth it. Everything we do it for the normies, just to wake up. We're going to get this trial. We're going to hear a bunch of facts that we've known for a few years. Everybody will be just as mad about immigration as we are, and they will understand what must happen. And what must happen is we need to pass the border security section of the unipartisan compromise. And we will get to that in just a minute. But let's talk about the Senate. This is the New York Times yesterday. Senate dismisses impeachment charges against Mayorkas without a trial. Oh, darn. I guess now we're not going to have that opportunity to display all the facts before the nation. The Senate on Wednesday dismissed the impeachment case against Alejandro Mayorkas, the Homeland Security Secretary, voting along party lines before his trial got underway, to sweep aside two charges accusing him of failing to enforce immigration laws and breaching the public trust. By a vote of 51-48, with one senator voting present, the Senate ruled that the first charge was unconstitutional because it failed to meet the constitutional bar of a high crime or misdemeanor. So without the trial, the Senate simply decided that the charges sent over by the House did not constitute a high crime or misdemeanor. And on the basis of that judgment that the House has already decided differently, the corrupt and illegitimate Senate deems the entire thing unconstitutional. The one present vote, the Republican holding out, by the way, was Lisa Murkowski, that staunch conservative. Murkowski joined her party in voting against dismissal of the second count on the same grounds. It fell along party lines on a 51-49 vote. Senator Chuck Schumer, Democrat of New York and the majority leader, voted to dismiss each charge, arguing that a cabinet member cannot be impeached and removed merely for carrying out the policies of the administration he serves. To validate this gross abuse by the House would be a grave mistake and could set a dangerous precedent for the future, Mr. Schumer added. It took only about 3 hours for the Senate to dispense with the matter. Republicans, for their part, warned that the dangerous precedent was the one that Democrats set by moving to skip an impeachment trial altogether, which they argued was a shirking of the Senate's constitutional duty. They tried several times to delay the dismissal, failing on a series of party line votes. CNN, in their coverage, quoted Chuck Schumer saying, "We want to address this issue as expeditiously as possible. Impeachment should never be used to settle a policy disagreement." He added, "Talk about awful precedents. This would set an awful precedent for Congress. Every time there's a policy disagreement in the House, they send it over here and tie the Senate in knots to do an impeachment trial? That's absurd. That's an abuse of the process. That is more chaos." CNN writes, "Some hard-right Republican senators were trying to find a way to force a full trial, but their efforts did not get enough traction to pass as procedural vote after procedural vote failed along party lines." So the Republicans in the Senate, they did their best. They did an admirable job to bring this full trial before the American people so that the American people could hear a full telling of these crucial facts. But as hard as those people with little R's next to their names fought on our behalf, oh, there were two more people with little D's next to their names that said, "Nuh-uh, you're not going to fight on behalf of the American people here." And so all of that energy, all of that emotion, all of that wasted effort, now it's just nothing. They did their little impeachment show of Alejandro Mayorkas, but they're not going to convict him, and they never were, and they knew that the entire time. And all of us should have known that the entire time. Now, if the audiences of Fox News and The Daily Wire thought that Alejandro Mayorkas was going to be impeached and removed, and they need these rugs pulled out from under them again and again and again in order to stop watching Fox News and The Daily Wire, then so be it. Maybe that was important somehow. Maybe they finally figure out those MAGA extremists are not the conspiracy theorists we've been told they are. Maybe there actually is something wrong here. Well, good. Again, I'm positive. I think that we are going to win 100%. I think that we have already won. I think we are watching disclosure of that fact along a delayed informational timeline, and we don't actually have to stay back there and move at the pace of the public story. This stuff doesn't bother me all that much. But in terms of our response, we need to disconnect from the past on an informational timeline and try to move ourselves closer to real time, because there are issues we can interact with that don't include us reciting facts that we've all known for 4 years to people who ignore everything, even when it's right in their faces. Now, fortunately, this is occurring while a great number of people are being shaken out of their slumber. I am totally open to the idea that it is good for people like that to see that impeachment articles can simply be dismissed, but then you got to remember there is a big chunk of people in this country who hate Donald Trump and hate his supporters and hate anything that they can qualify as MAGA, and a bunch of those people have little R's next to their names. All of those people are happy to suggest that the Senate dismissing these impeachment charges without a trial is exactly what should have happened, because the impeachment charges were brought up as a result of conspiracy theories in the first place. And the problem for those people who want to acknowledge that this is an info op and think it's a good one is that all of those people who are saying, hey, this is all bullshit, they're right too. We can frame this all as being a positive development that helps wake up the normies, but we should at least acknowledge that it also helps a whole bunch of normies go back to sleep. They are all in the middle of trying to reframe Donald Trump as the reason we have border problems, and while that is never ultimately going to work, this is not some great display of competence and efficiency on behalf of people who brand themselves as aligned with MAGA. Here is the end of the CNN article. Let's hear the illegitimate Biden administration's point of view on all this. The Department of Homeland Security and White House praised Senate Democrats for killing the impeachment proceedings. Once and for all, the Senate has rightly voted down this baseless impeachment that even conservative legal scholars said was unconstitutional, said Ian Sams, White House spokesperson for oversight and investigations. President Biden and Secretary Mayorkas will continue doing their jobs to keep America safe and pursue actual solutions at the border, and congressional Republicans should join them instead of wasting time on baseless political stunts while killing real bipartisan border security reforms. All of this will be reframed and repackaged and used to support the notion that Republicans should favor and vote for the unipartisan compromise because it has the quote-unquote border security package. And again, that border security package is about increasing the technological surveillance state at the border and on anyone who enters it. And that will be turned inward on the American interior to track and surveil the American people. Not that they're not already perfectly capable of doing that. And they will also provide more funding and more staff to increase the efficiency and facilitation of the global slave trade, as they are bringing these slaves that they call migrants through the UN migration program all the way through Central America and up through our southern border. At least that is when they're not being flown directly into Ron DeSantis's Florida. Now, if there's any silver lining to any of this at all, it is that they are at least very publicly displaying their standards for how impeachments should function and what is impeachable. Chuck Schumer is saying that impeachment cannot come simply from policy differences. There has to be a high crime or misdemeanor, and it has to be basically on its face already true. Otherwise, it doesn't meet the constitutional standard for impeachment. Schumer's position asserts that that judgment can be made without even the necessity for a trial. The House filing and transmitting articles of impeachment actually does not command the Senate to do anything other than simply have a straight majority up or down vote to say, no, we're not going to do that. But of course, we already knew that they don't actually care about constitutional standards. The Constitution is only used to justify their position when they think it will help. It is not there as the foundation of our rule of law. It seems they also have agreed now in principle to the idea that it is impossible to do an impeachably bad job. You cannot be impeached for doing a terrible job. Especially not if it can be argued that the terrible job you're doing is the product of carrying out really bad policies set by the person, quote unquote, elected to determine those policies. And I think perhaps there is a parallel here to the Trump immunity arguments that will be taking place in the Supreme Court next Wednesday. Donald Trump posted about this on Truth Social yesterday. He wrote, "Crooked Joe Biden wants presidential immunity to be protected, perhaps more than any other living, barely, individual, because if it isn't, and having absolutely nothing to do with me, he will surely be indicted and tried for many of his dishonest, illegal, or incompetent actions. The Afghanistan disaster, southern border catastrophe. A president should not be placed in that position. He must be free to make decisions, hopefully correct ones." And so Trump has been consistently arguing that a president must have full immunity when it comes to carrying out functions of his job. If not, then presidents could be prosecuted for decisions they made in good faith if the opposition is able to form some sort of majority or consensus. And that would be a very dangerous situation for a president if it turns out that one is in office and facing down the full uniparty in opposition, as Donald Trump has done and will do. I discussed this on Telegram yesterday. I believe that what Donald Trump is doing here in this post and through this narrative storyline that has developed now over the course of months, what he's doing is narrative manipulation relative to the media and reverse psychology relative to people who just still have no idea what's going on with any of this. When Donald Trump says he should have immunity, they're all going to argue, no, he shouldn't. No, he shouldn't. We need to go get Trump, because all they think about is get Trump. Everything is about Trump. It's not about principles. Principles don't matter. Principles are used ad hoc to achieve certain outcomes and abandoned when they are inconvenient, as far as these people are concerned. And so when Donald Trump comes out in favor of something, they will come out against it. And of course, the opposite is true. At the end of this storyline, we need to have a standard set on what qualifies as legitimate decisions and actions related to being president, for which the president should have immunity. It seems to me that the issue is not whether or not a president should have any sort of immunity. It's what counts as being directly related to the official duties of the president. What we actually need is the Goldilocks position. We need to have a standard so that we don't have a get out of jail free card, so that a president like Barack Obama, for instance, can't simply reframe everything criminal that he has done as something directly related to his job, and thereby a simple policy disagreement where he can then take advantage of presidential immunity. But we also don't want a situation where a president can be prosecuted all the time by his political opponents for decisions he made and actions he took in office. So hopefully this is that process of standard setting. I've said many times, I just want the lines drawn on the field. Draw the lines on the field so that we all agree that's where the lines are. We're going to play under the same rules. Let's get all those rules set out on the table. We'll all play by them. I have no question whatsoever that under any set of rules they design, we are capable of winning. So let's just get all those rules out there. And if this aids in that process, again, all good. In that, the conversation about what constitutes an impeachable offense and what is required for presidential immunity kind of run parallel to one another and operate on some of the same principles. To the extent that we are going to continue having a government that operates under this system, these standards actually do need to be set. And the last note on the Senate dismissal of these impeachment charges is that, of course, we are getting the claim from those on the side of the illegitimate administration that there is just no evidence by which Mayorkas could ever be impeached. As always, baseless claims, no evidence. They're going to take the extreme position, knowing that they have supporters who will argue and support that extreme position. And they can count on these people to put the cart before the horse on all of this and suggest that because the charges were dismissed, there is no evidence. They are happy to support the legitimacy and good faith of these institutions so long as they keep creating results aligned with the motivations of these supporters of the Uniparty. So let's get into the House deliberations over the unipartisan compromise that has now been broken down into all of its component parts. We talked about this a bit on Tuesday, and we were going through the article from Politico that mentioned that the TikTok ban that has already passed would be made part of this unipartisan compromise. Now, someone on Truth Social asked what the deal with that was, so I had to go in and try to figure out why exactly the TikTok ban was being added into the unipartisan compromise when it seemed like they had already gotten that done. And it took me a little bit to find that answer because essentially every article is just regurgitating the exact same thing, often in the exact same language. It's one of those moments that makes you think that dead internet theory might actually be real. It seems like the internet is shrinking. You get 10 options and all of them are the same. And if you continue trying to dig, you'll quickly hit bedrock finding nothing. I ended up finally finding the answer on a website called the Louisiana Illuminator. And I was like, what the hell is this? And when I'm dealing with a new news outlet, I'll go to their about page, see what I can learn there. I'll look them up on Wikipedia. I'll find out where the money's coming from, because we have a situation where the market for mainstream media outlets is fully saturated. We don't need more mainstream media outlets. So it's odd that an upstart media outlet would give us the exact same stories and details as the mainstream media. Why would anyone invest in a new version of the exact same thing when the branding isn't there, the talent isn't there, the history's not there, the loyalty's not there? It makes absolutely no sense. So there has to be more going on. So I'm looking at the Louisiana Illuminator, and it turns out that they are part of a network called the States Newsroom. They claim to be providing coverage of each and every one of the states. They've set up their little partner outlets in each state. The most notable of those is the Arizona Mirror, who has essentially run fake news content interference with anything seeking election integrity in Arizona. But here are the names of some other outlets in the States Newsroom network. You can go to statesnewsroom.com, by the way. The Commonwealth Beacon, the Maine Morning Star, Maryland Matters, the Rhode Island Current, the Vermont Digger, the Kansas Reflector, the Nebraska Examiner, the South Dakota Spotlight, the New York Focus, the Indiana Capital Chronicle. What great names for news outlets. You can feel confident that all of them are just trying to bring you the truth in good faith. That's why these news outlets were started. Who wants to get their news from ABC or NBC or CNN when you can read all the exact same stories and viewpoints packaged in a way that makes you think it's a local outlet catering to your needs, your issues, and your interests? But if you go to influencewatch.org, as I often encourage, you will find out that this States Newsroom network is funded by Hopewell Fund and Arabella Advisors and a number of other global philanthropies. You can actually also access the list of States Newsroom supporters on their own website, and you will find a long list of funds and philanthropies and foundations like the Goldman Sachs Philanthropy Fund and the Google News Initiative Journalism Emergency Relief Fund, Pew Charitable Trusts, and it just goes on and on and on. Philanthropist-funded fake news representing itself as independent local journalism. But this was their story on Wednesday, the headline, U.S. House GOP rolls out aid for Ukraine and Israel, votes planned on TikTok and border security. And the article reports, as most of these articles do, on a memo from Mike Johnson to members of Congress in the morning on Wednesday to announce the bills and the amendment votes to come. In the section that describes what's happening with TikTok, the Louisiana Illuminator writes, The House will also take votes on a border security bill, as well as a separate package that includes a bill banning the social media site TikTok unless it's sold by Chinese owner ByteDance, Johnson wrote. The House approved the TikTok bill in mid-March, but it's been held up in the Senate ever since, as that chamber debates whether to take it up. That bill will now be rolled into a package with, quote, sanctions and other measures to confront Russia, China, and Iran, Johnson wrote. Johnson's decision to move forward with aid to Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan comes amid increasing frustration from especially conservative members of the House Republican Conference, two of whom are calling for him to resign or face a vote that could remove him from the leadership post. And they're referencing Marjorie Taylor Greene, of course, one of the people who walked the fake impeachment of Alejandro Mayorkas over to the Senate. And the other, Thomas Massie, who called for Johnson to resign. Massie himself is a Ron DeSantis cuckold, as is Chip Roy, who is always angry at everything except for the uniparty right establishment. So a month or so ago, we got a big push to support the potential banning of TikTok from the Apple and Google app stores if ByteDance did not divest from TikTok as its subsidiary. That bill passed the House, it went over to the Senate, and they just weren't sure what to do with it, so they just left it there. Now they have decided that the move to get this done is to tie that TikTok ban into the unipartisan compromise. That is the only reason why it's being voted on again. As far as I can find, if someone else out there is able to find another justification being given for this process going this way, by all means, send it my way. But it seems pretty clear that they're trying to package this whole thing together and then have the Senate pass it on an up or down vote. They also want it packaged all together in the House so they can pass it on an up or down vote and not take individual responsibility for each element of this package. We've got Ukraine assistance, Israel assistance, Taiwan assistance, that submarine base in Australia. We've got the Repo Act, which steals $300 billion of Russian-owned assets that are currently frozen and gives them to Ukraine so that they can distribute all those funds however the hell they like. Got the ban on TikTok, and we've got the border security element. They want to put all that together and push it through. We didn't have an omnibus. We had two minibuses. And this thing, this is not any of those things. This is just the unipartisan compromise because everyone in the illegitimate House and the illegitimate Senate, and of course, you can also throw in the illegitimate president, they all agree that this legislation must be enacted. This is what they refer to as doing their job, despite the fact that virtually no American wants all this stuff passed. Now, I am not doubting that there are some standard issue villagers out there who are convinced that we need to help all our allies and that we can just steal $300 billion from Russians and it won't be any problem. And we can just ban social media apps that we don't like on the basis that they're harming Americans while protecting other apps that are doing the exact same thing just because we're told they're based in America. There might be some small number of people out there who actually want to see each and every element of this passed, but the leftists primarily who want to see Ukraine funding continue and are happy to see those seized Russian assets redeployed don't necessarily want to fund Israel as it continues to attack Gaza and don't want to ban TikTok. And that's kind of the joy of these packages and the purpose of these packages. Any individual member of Congress can say, for instance, I'm not for the Ukraine funding. I have seen that that was a mistake and that victory is not possible in Ukraine. But I do want to support our greatest allies ever in Israel. No matter how many people they need to kill, we're going to give them the ability to kill indiscriminately for as long as they want because that paragliding go-kart incident was just so horrific. And everybody knows that China is our greatest threat. Therefore, I support all the spending in the Indo-Pacific, including that weird submarine base in Australia, and I support the ban of TikTok because that's a Chinese app. And of course, there's the package that is called border security that doesn't really provide border security, but it's called that, and I'm pretty sure I can sell that to my constituents. So yes, I am going to go ahead and vote for the spending on Ukraine, and I'm going to go ahead and vote for the redeployment of those seized Russian assets, even if it brings down the world economy, because those other elements are just so important to me. And the Uniparty left can sell their passage of this package in the same way. They'll say, we didn't want to continue funding Israel in their genocide against Gaza, but we do need to keep the pressure on Putin and the pressure on China. And while our young supporters love TikTok, well, they'll get over it. I had to pass this package, or we would be abandoning those very brave Ukrainians. We saw Chuck Schumer a few weeks ago use his position as Senate Majority Leader, quote unquote, to call for regime change in Israel. Very strange. But he weighed in yesterday from the Senate floor. Schumer said Wednesday morning that he was waiting to see what exactly the House bills would propose in terms of funding and what makes it out of the House chamber before deciding what the Senate will do. The entire world is waiting to see what House Republicans will do about aid to Ukraine, aid to Israel, humanitarian assistance, and aid to the Indo-Pacific. Putin is watching very closely to see if America will step up and show strength or slink away from a friend in need. So you see, everybody needs our money. And as long as we put all of these things together in the same package, each and every member has something that they can vote for and something that they can come out against, which means none of them can be held accountable for the whole thing. They can't even be held accountable for their own decision. You see, it was just that they were put in a bind. It was an up or down vote on the whole package, and we just couldn't lose certain parts of it. The fake president, of course, is behind it. And the hard right Republicans in the House are against all of this. And the normal reaction from MAGA and America First supporters would be to get on the side of those hard right Republicans in their opposition to all of this spending. But honestly, at this point, why would anyone do that? Why would anyone be supporting a Chip Roy or a Thomas Massie or a Marjorie Taylor Greene in their opposition to this stuff when all of these bodies are illegitimate and we are being shown over and over and over again that at best, all of this is a stage play. At best, these people are just presenting a counterpoint and a counterargument in public. At worst, they are operating as controlled opposition. It's awfully hard to get behind Mike Johnson on any of this stuff because we don't want any of it passed. But that doesn't lead me to believe that we should support these other people as they allow it to be passed while kicking and screaming to make it look to us like they are fighting on our behalf. None of these people should be given the benefit of the doubt. And if that means we have zero allies in Congress, that's just fine because the whole thing is illegitimate. CNN has been tracking this today with an article that they continue to update, and those updates include changes to the headline. You can watch them simply throw ideas into the memory hole in real time today. The original headline was GOP members urge Johnson to swiftly change rules over vacating speakership, and now the same article has the headline House GOP erupts into name-calling and fresh threats to Johnson over effort to pass aid. Now, Johnson appeared on CNN with Jake Tapper. Let's have a listen.
Some of your colleagues are blasting your plan to separate the bills. Here's a little sampler that we presented and prepared for you.
It's surrender. It's disappointing. I won't support it. It's disappointing. It's completely detached from what our base wants, what our voters want.
Well, go ahead, move it. I mean, I'm a voting no. I'm voting no. I've never voted to give any money to Ukraine, and I'm not going to do it today.
I'm absolutely disappointed.
I don't know how long people are going to tolerate this because he's doing nothing but serving the Democrats.
All right. I'm sure you know those voices, but it's Gaetz, Crane, Nels, Burleson, and, of course, Marjorie Taylor Greene. Are you going to have to rely on Democrats to pass the rule in order to bring these bills to the floor and also the legislation itself?
Well, I hope not. I hope that our Republican colleagues will stand together, stick together on this. I think we understand, look, I'm a child of the 80s. I regard myself as a Reagan Republican. I understand the concept of maintaining peace through strength. That's one of our guiding principles. It's a really important philosophy, and it's a big part of our party and our worldview. And I think here it's at stand at a really critical time in world history. I mean, there are global implications to what we do. So, look, everybody can grumble about details of the legislation. What I remind my friends and everybody you just showed are all good friends. Listen, we're not going to get 100% of what we want right now because we have the smallest majority in history, and we only have the majority in one chamber. The Republicans run the House. We have the small majority in the House. The Democrats are in charge of the Senate and the White House. So we're, by definition, we won't get everything we want, but we got a great product here at the end, much better than the alternative that came in the Senate supplemental. And now everybody gets to vote their conscience, up or down. That's what we're for, regular process, regular order, and accountability to the people. And I think you'll see that here this week.
There's another player here that we haven't talked about, Donald Trump, who you support for president. Mm-hmm. I want to play some of what he said last night when he was asked if he plans to protect you from any sort of motion to dispose of you by the far right. Take a listen.
Well, we'll see what happens with that. I think he's a very good person.
We'll see what happens with that. I think he's a very good person. Have you talked to Trump about this plan, this legislative plan, in terms of how you're introducing these foreign aid bills? And ultimately, will he have your back?
Oh, I think he will. I was just with him on Friday down at Mar-a-Lago, and we had dinner together, and my wife was with me, and we had a great visit. We talked about a lot of things, all the politics going on in the country, and he said at a press conference we had there together that I'm doing a very good job, and he supports me and all of that. Listen, I think this is all going to work out. I think it's going to be fine. I did tell the president the plan on all of this, and I think he clearly understands why we're running this play and why we need to do this. I think this sets up the next election, the next administration, the next president, and I believe he's going to win in a better position. I think that President Trump is strong enough that he could enter the world stage and broker a peace deal in Ukraine if Russia is still advancing at that time. I mean, I think he has the strong enough hand to be able to do that, and that's why this election is so important. There's a very stark contrast. We didn't have all these global conflicts. We didn't have hot wars around the globe when Donald Trump was the president. You know why? Because our adversaries feared him and respected him. They don't fear and respect Joseph Biden, and that's a real problem for all of us.
So Mike Johnson says he is aligned with Donald Trump, and he may well be telling the truth about that. He did go down to Mar-a-Lago. He met with Trump on Friday. Johnson seems to be putting forward these bills that we know we don't want. It seems like he is doing that despite knowing that we don't want them. And we are left to assume that Johnson is doing all of this because he is succumbing to forces aligned with the Uniparty, aligned with the global regime. And Matt Boyle and Wendell Husebo from Breitbart did some extensive reporting on this yesterday. I encourage you to take a look. Mike Johnson's top policy advisor is former lobbyist. Clients have corporate interest in Ukraine war. It's a very long article. They lay out a case. I'm not sure that they've proven their case. I'm not sure I believe this is what's actually going on, but it's well worth taking a look. The long and short of it is that Mike Johnson didn't support the Ukraine efforts prior to becoming speaker, and now all of a sudden he's willing to push this stuff forward. The article asserts that this is because two of his key advisors, Dan Ziegler and Josh Hodges, are part of the swamp, and they have swayed Johnson in his thinking based on incentives derived from the swamp. Now, I have a feeling that there's a lot more at play, and I want to see this process play out. I am not 100% certain that Mike Johnson is the one to be condemned here, when on the other side, we have a bunch of Ron DeSantis supporters trying to prove to us that they are more MAGA than Donald Trump is. That is the same standpoint they took while supporting Ron DeSantis throughout the fake primaries. We're just going to have to see how this all shakes out, because it's possible that what has upset the Uniparty right members so much is the possibility they might have to vote on each of these aspects individually, thus opening them to accountability, which is what Johnson mentioned in that exchange with Jake Tapper. Now, again, I think that this thing might be stitched together for an up or down vote on the whole thing, in which case the individual accountability doesn't apply at all. That just immediately vanishes. But that's the sort of thing where we have to wait and see how this actually turns out. If people actually have to go on the record and vote for or against individual parts, that's going to make it a lot more complicated for the Uniparty in general to protect its members and get each one of these measures passed. And that includes members on the Uniparty left. But that process would very much align with what I often refer to as sifting. Go through round after round after round of that process and see who's still there. It is absolutely preferable to know where each one of these members of the illegitimate Congress stand relative to each one of these bills. Make them go on record each and every time. That is what was supposed to be in the House rules at the beginning of Kevin McCarthy's speakership. Single subject spending bills. Matt Gaetz was out there right in front of this whole thing. And let's return to the TikTok part of this issue for just a second. Because there's a big chunk of the Uniparty right who think that they are making a very easy case to the American public by saying, China bad, we need to ban TikTok. When we were talking about TikTok a month or so ago, I mentioned that by the same standards they could bring down TikTok, they could also bring down Telegram. And this week, Tucker Carlson had the founder of Telegram, Pavel Durov, on his show for an hour-long interview. And during that interview, Durov talked about how the most interference he gets in the United States of America ends up coming through Apple and Google and threats to their placement in the ad store. That is the exact enforcement mechanism in this bill to ban TikTok. It would be removed from the app stores. Now, as far as we go, myself, people who think like I do, people who actually want to find true and uncensored information, not constantly being fed the official story within the central narrative, we migrated to Telegram years ago. But plenty of people out there are unaware that Telegram even exists. So Tucker has Pavel Durov on, and now all of the normies have been awoken to the existence of Telegram. It's interesting, by the way, that during that conversation, Pavel Durov mentioned that he also founded VK. So he has VK, which is basically his version of Facebook, and he has Telegram, which is his version of WhatsApp. But even that might be reversing things. You could say that Facebook and WhatsApp are the American versions of Pavel Durov's VK and Telegram. Durov with Telegram is pretty clearly more committed to free speech than Mark Zuckerberg and his Meta platforms. Why aren't our very based and red-pilled Uniparty right representatives going after Facebook and Instagram and YouTube and Snapchat? Various factions have gone hard after X, formerly Twitter, and they have no qualms going hard after TikTok. Telegram can be lumped into that. And Telegram being banned from the App Store, along with TikTok, means that two platforms where anti-regime content can exist would be shut down by members of the Uniparty. Why would anyone want that? Once we get over the MCCP of it all, we can see this effort for what it is, and if members are forced to vote on these things individually, then we can know which members of the Uniparty right have no commitment whatsoever to free speech. So the discussions now are on whether or not Johnson will attempt to change the rules for the motion to vacate, which could push him out of his role as the speaker. CNN in their coverage wrote, "In recent days, rank-and-file House Republicans have privately encouraged Johnson to insert language into the text of a rule for the foreign aid bills to alter the motion to vacate and make it harder for any single member to use." And we will see how that progresses as well. It's possible that MTG might bring that motion to vacate to the floor on Friday and try to get a vote on that, maybe while Mike Gallagher from Wisconsin the rising neocon star who is now just leaving his job in the middle of his term? Will they get the thing accomplished before he leaves or after he leaves? And if it's after, then what are we going to do? End up with Speaker Hakeem Jeffries or Speaker Liz Cheney? How long have we been talking about that? At least 6 months. Are we going to see it? Seems like we're gonna. Do you prefer to know about that now, or do you prefer to get totally invested emotionally and get angry with everyone on Fox News and The Daily Wire and The Blaze? Ooh, Tucker Carlson is going to tell you how the Republicans can't keep it together, and we'll all get very, very, very mad about something we saw 6 months in advance. Is it blackpilling to say that nothing would be done in this Republican Congress back at the beginning of the Republican Congress? Was it blackpilling for me to suggest that we shouldn't have any speaker because there's nothing that they can accomplish? Was it blackpilling to suggest Johnson would be ousted and replaced with Hakeem Jeffries or Liz Cheney? Nope, sure wasn't. But we can still pretend there's a value to talking positively about our illegitimate Congress. But let's leave this question open on Mike Johnson for just a little bit longer. We're going to know so much more in a couple of days, and Johnson has been giving hints that maybe this isn't what we see. An account on Truth Social that goes by Real AF Patriot, like Real America First Patriot, posted this video yesterday comparing comments that Mike Johnson made on Tuesday to comments Donald Trump made at one of the COVID press conferences.
I'm a wartime president. This is a war. This is a war. Different kind of a war than we've ever had.
Look, I regard myself as a wartime speaker. I mean, in a literal sense, we are.
So Trump said he was a wartime president. People pretended that wasn't true, or that Trump as president wasn't allowed to say it because he's Donald Trump and he's not one of those serious uniparty presidents where he says something and everyone agrees. This is what the president says. This is how it is. No. Donald Trump, he can't be treated as a serious president despite the fact that he was duly elected and Joe Biden is a complete and total faker and fraud. Everyone just pretended that Donald Trump was shooting his mouth off or exaggerating or trying to be boastful and puff himself up by calling himself a wartime president during COVID. But he wasn't joking around. He wasn't exaggerating. He wasn't puffing himself up. He was at war. The country has been at war. Donald Trump, as president in a time of war, does have additional powers and additional options open to him. And we're all just going to pretend he didn't take advantage of any of that, despite knowing that there's no way in the world Joe Biden received 81 million real lawful American votes. Trump just walked away. And so we just go on pretending that Donald Trump never said that and that we're not actually at war. But all of that is nonsense. And Johnson reiterated that. He said he means it literally. And the media just encourages us to pretend that Johnson as well is simply exaggerating or something. This is from MSNBC.com in the Maddow blog, the Rachel Maddow blog. Why exactly does Mike Johnson see himself as a wartime speaker? 6 months into his tenure, it's likely that House Speaker Mike Johnson thought the job would be easier, and already we're off to an absurd start. And of course we are reading the writing of a deranged communist and a standard issue villager on the uniparty left. When the Louisiana Republican received the gavel in October, he was, alas, his party's fifth choice. He almost certainly couldn't have imagined where he'd find himself in mid-April. Nevertheless, there Johnson sits, watching his members quit, fail to show up for his retreat focused on conference unity, humiliate him on procedural votes, reject his clumsy attempts at governing, force him to rely on Democrat votes to advance must-pass legislation, and take increasingly credible steps to fire him. So that's what his members of his conference are doing to him. Now, do we blame that on him, Or do we blame that on members of his conference? Or is it all for show? It could be all for show. But to the extent it's not, do we really trust those members of the Uniparty right when they tell us Mike Johnson is the bad guy in this scenario while Donald Trump is meeting with him and seems to be giving him his approval? I wouldn't side with any of these members of the Republican conference. And I'm not trying to insult them all. I'm hopeful that some of them are good people, but that's not my default. That's not my default at all. I am far more inclined to see this as a controlled opposition uniparty effort to thwart Donald Trump and MAGA's plans. Mike Johnson, in that scenario, is just the person with that role. It was against this backdrop that the beleaguered House Speaker spoke to reporters at a Capitol Hill press conference yesterday. This article is from yesterday, so they're referring to Tuesday. A Washington Post report highlighted some of the GOP leaders' more pointed comments. So this is MSNBC quoting the Washington Post. "I am not resigning," Johnson said defiantly at a news conference Tuesday, calling the threat absurd as Republicans are, quote, trying to do their job. "We need steady leadership," he said. "We need steady hands on the wheel. Look, I regard myself as a wartime speaker." And back to MSNBC. "When I first started seeing reports about the congressman referring to himself as a wartime speaker, I more or less assumed he was referring to ongoing crises in Ukraine and the Middle East. It seemed a bit hyperbolic. Usually, U.S. House speakers refer to themselves as wartime leaders when it's the United States at war, but it didn't seem worth making a fuss about. The problem, however, was that there was some ambiguity in Johnson's unscripted rhetoric." And here are his comments.
"Now we're in a political struggle, a battle between a completely different vision for the country. We have colleagues in the Congress who envision for us not those things. They have disdain for those things I just listed. They instead envision that America should be remade in the form of some sort of, you know, European-style socialist utopia. That is a dangerous fool's errand. That is a road to Marxism, communism, you know, socialism. That's a step towards those eventualities, and that is not who we are as a country. And so for us to accomplish our mission, which is to save the Republic, we need to add more Republicans to the House and grow the House majority so we have more votes. We need to win back the Republican majority in the Senate, and we need to restore Donald J. Trump to the White House as our nominee. I believe all those things will happen, but we have to have a united front, and we have to have our members work together. And we'll be working today to do that very thing. Look, we are in unprecedented times. Okay, we're in dangerous times, as has been articulated here, around the world, and here at home. We need steady leadership. We need steady hands at the wheel. I regard myself as a wartime speaker. I mean, in a literal sense, we are. I knew that when I took the gavel. I didn't anticipate that this would be an easy path. Former Speaker Newt Gingrich posted a couple days ago on his social media that this is the hardest challenge that's faced a speaker probably in the history of the country, in the moment that we're in right now. He said arguably maybe comparable to the Civil War, but maybe worse. A single vote margin at a difficult time when the nation is terribly divided. The way we get through that is we show unity and we explain how we have answers to all these great challenges. We have those answers. We shouldn't get in the way of ourselves.
Now, it's hard to know what to make of all that, but he's saying all the right things. And we literally are at war. He accurately described the enemy. He talked about the effort to save the Republic. Let's continue with MSNBC. In context, a reporter asked the House Speaker for his response to efforts launched by members of his own conference to oust him. After declaring that he wouldn't resign and expressing his disgust with the entire motion to vacate plot, Johnson shared a broader perspective about his political vision. "Republicans want to save the country," he said. "We believe we're in an existential moment. We're in a political struggle, a battle between a completely different vision for the country." Referring to at least some congressional Democrats, Johnson added, "They instead envision that America should be remade in the form of some sort of, you know, European-style socialist utopia. That is a dangerous fool's errand. That is a road to Marxism, communism, you know, socialism." And I have to imagine that Johnson is referring to all congressional Democrats and probably most congressional Republicans to the extent that his comments represent his real views and are being spoken in good faith. The MSNBC hack reprints more of the quotes that you just heard and concludes this way. Johnson wrapped up the press conference moments later, denying congressional reporters an opportunity to ask the obvious follow-up question, exactly which war was the House Speaker referring to? And all of a sudden, this kind of seems like 2020 again, the end of 2020. That whole period where the mainstream media would continually print articles about how they weren't exactly sure what Donald Trump meant. He's saying these weird things. What could he mean? It's clear that we're not really at war. So what is he saying when he says he's a wartime president? The mainstream media would always feign ignorance when they didn't want to discuss the possibilities of what was actually being said. Is Donald Trump actually suggesting that the United States of America is at war and that he, as president, is leading that effort? Why would they want to discuss that? Why would they want to let the American people know that Donald Trump believes that he is at war, a wartime president? The article here didn't answer the question at all. What does Mike Johnson mean? They have no idea. Still an open question. He can't possibly mean what Donald Trump meant when he said it. It's got to be something else. And we can't possibly know what that something else is. All we can know is that those people who suggest something else is actually going on behind the scenes and has been throughout this entire period, they're all conspiracy theorists. All right, guys, that is the show for today. I am not going to have an episode tomorrow. I am on my way to the Great American Restoration Tour event hosted by Badlands Media. If you are attending that, make sure to say hello. I look forward to seeing you or meeting you. I will have OG I Survived COVID t-shirts there if you want one. And I know that there are virtual tickets for that event available if you want to watch on badlandsmedia.tv. As for me, I will be back Monday at the same reasonable time on the same reasonable podcast network. I don't have a network. Masks and lockdowns don't work. They lied to you about a pandemic, and Joe Biden will never be president.
In my mind, that's the end game.
If you're listening to this episode for free, you can support me and support the show and the work I do by signing up for a paid subscription at imyourmoderator.substack.com. You can do so for as low as $50 a year or $5 a month. Comes out to under a quarter per episode, and you'll blast right through the paywall for all of the writing. The merch store is www.cancelcouture.com, and you can find everything else by heading to Linktree. Linktree.com/I'm Your Moderator. And I'll see you soon out on the range.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
In my mind, that's the end game.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to follow what I'm reading and thinking throughout the day, you can do that by downloading the Telegram Messenger app and going to t.me/I'm your moderator. On social media, you can follow me on Truth Social, Getter, and Gab at I'm Your Moderator. I also have channels on Rumble and BitChute. If you'd like to follow the writing, you can find me at I'mYourModerator.substack.com. The merch site is CancelCouture.com or go direct shop.spreadshirt.com/cancel-couture. If you'd like to support the podcast financially, the best place to do that is Ko-Fi. Go to ko-fi.com/I'mYourModerator. And all of these details will appear in the show notes with each episode. I'll see you soon down on the range.
It's hell!